I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Welcome to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official podcast for UK Seahawkers. Well, the 2016 Seahawks season is over, but we are all still here. Myself, Stuart Court, is as ever joined by Ross Bell and Adam Nathan. How are we, guys?
Yep.
Adam?
Yep.
This week we will look back over this past weekend's season-ending defeat in Atlanta, look ahead to the next step of this 2017 off-season with free agency and a new drafting Seahawks to quell your O-line concerns somewhat, as well as grade out all those who took a snap for the Seahawks this year. We also have another true or false along the way too. But let's start off in the Georgia Dome. A disappointing, if not at all that surprising, buzzsaw was waiting for us in Atlanta this weekend, where despite a quick start from the offense, sort of Jimmy Graham touchdown catch in the red zone, the Seahawks failed to even slightly stop the Kyle Shanahan run offense with its power, precision and pace all too much for a banged up, more than we thought as well, Seahawks defense. A few sparkling Devin Hester returns never got the team going as penalties, needless in the biggest case, cost the team and put them at a disadvantage compared to what the return looked to have given them. A late Doug Baldwin touchdown did little to spark a comeback or any interest from yours truly, and the Seahawks season ended angrily 36-20. But at least there was no overreaction on any social media platform, eh, guys? Adam?
No, I think it's been a good, well-measured response and approach from the masses. Although, in fairness, I don't know, it depends how optimistic you've been. I think we all tried to put a brave face on it last week and end up with some egg on our face, although I think deep down we probably all figured that if it didn't go exactly perfectly, we were going to get pumped, and we got pumped.
Yeah, I think that's, but I think we did kind of, it was definitely rose-tinted glasses, and especially on this podcast last week where we all predicted the win. It didn't take long for the confidence to be dashed. Ross?
I'm just happy it's over. This season's just, like Adam said, for weeks, it's just lurched on. We're waiting for the playoffs to begin, and then, yeah, we've just been soundly beaten. I'm looking forward to some stuff happening in the off-season now.
Yeah, it should be quite a fun off-season. Well, we'll start off with something I saw on Facebook and saw on Twitter, that Richard Sherman got a hell of a lot of blame for some reason after Saturday. He come out on Monday somewhat hastily, tried to be retracted and re-enclosed by Pete Carroll in his press conference, that Sherman's played the last half of the season with a badly sprained knee, I think it was. But yeah, there's a lot of noise about how Julio had his way with Sherman. And me, in my boredom on Monday night, went through Julio Jones' 2016 season. This guy was possibly the best wide receiver in the league for a certain stretch, the early stretch of the season. This year, he had games with receptions from 4, 5, 1, 12. 12 receptions in a game, that's his 300-yard game. 2, 7, 9, 3, 8, 10, 4, 7, 4, 7. And then this Sunday, where he had 6. This Saturday, where he had 6. Those with 5 or more catches games, he had 106 yards, 300, 139, which was against us when he wasn't mirrored all the time against Sherman, 174 yards, 111, 135, 113, 96 in week 16, I think it was, and then 67 on Saturday. In what way is 67 yards by far? I mean, what? It's 30 yards next to the last one. It's 60 yards to the second lowest total. In what way was Sherman destroyed by Julio Jones? The way they set up with all the players off and stuff, that was bizarre, but Richard Sherman, I mean, really? He gets 67 yards. It's way below what Julio Jones has put up on these. I think his season average yards per game is 100. So he had 30 yards less. I mean, Adam?
I think he's always going to be the popular guy to have a go at because he is the loudmouth of the team. And I think that comes from a lot of people outside the team who love to see him fail. And also, even inside, there's the idea that, you know, oh my God, Sherman got burned. Shanahan's offense, the whole point of it is quick passes, getting the ball out quickly.
Yeah.
And as a cornerback, the best you can really hope for if the pass is well thrown is that the receiver catches it in front of you and you tackle him. And that's pretty much what Sherman did.
Yeah, definitely. It's also the same with the Packers as well. When they actually go, I mean, the championship game a couple of years ago, which was rehashed, re-bought up, with the Wills film, The Rain City Miracle, every pass on Sherman's side was in front of him. He makes that remarkable tackle with one arm on third down, which forced the Mason Crosby field goal to take it to overtime. But that was a slant pass in front of him. He tackles him immediately. There's very few cornerbacks in the league, I think Pro Football Focus have vouched for it as well this year, who tackle in the open field at the position of the cornerback as well and as solidly as Sherman does. So, yeah. Russ?
Well, yeah, he didn't get beaten deep, and you take that touchdown off of Julio, that's a below average game for a number one elite receiver, isn't it? 6 receptions for 67 yards. Paul Richardson got 4 for 83. Stick a touchdown on there, and that's a much better game if you're just looking at stats.
Exactly.
And it's a massive OPI on the touchdown as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if it's Billick or Boldinger put on Twitter, if Mohamed Sanu is allowed to block while the ball's in the air like this Sunday, then it's going to be 80 points each.
Just the Saints game over again.
I think I said immediately to you, Adam, it was so obvious. He didn't even, we curse when he's got done, he's tried to run a route and got caught by just being a stupid idiot. But that is just so blatant, and it's just all the they need. That is something they need to focus on in the competition committee and all that stuff, and just get that sorted for next year. Because the grey area for that should not be there. Because it should be yes or no, like any elsewhere on the field of penalty. Like that is it's either yes or no. But we have 5 months of all the Julio Jones nonsense, and then that happens within 8 minutes of the game on Sunday. Elsewhere, offensive line was overwhelmed after a solid-looking first drive. That's a bit of a concern, and yet again, something where people have possibly got their fire burning as the off-season comes through, Russ.
Yeah, I mean, it is overall a disaster this season. How many games have they looked like a solid offensive line? 3, possibly? I mean, the Lions game is the standout. You take a fetty from that play, from that drive where Russell ends up in his own end zone on his back because Odiambo stood on his foot. It's just a fucking clown car of an offensive line at times. I've seen Russell get stood on far too many times this season.
Yeah, and also Russell gets stood on, had a large say in that season from the opposing team, and Doug and Sue falling on him as well. George Fant had a bad day on Saturday. He was rated, I think it was 27.7 out of 100 by Pro Football Focus, which is remarkable in its swear words. Adam, O-line?
I mean, the O-line is an absolute disaster, and we did call it on the first podcast of the season that, you know, this could be the thing that costs us. I got two comments mainly to make on it. One, I mean, we've played a lot of teams this year where in the week leading up to it, a lot of the talk has been, oh, you know, their offensive line isn't that good, so, you know, the pass rush can get home. Our offensive line has always looked at least 2 levels worse than any of these other, in brackets, bad offensive lines.
Yeah.
Other quarterbacks don't get sacked by 4 rushers. running backs don't get stuffed at the line or behind the line by 3 or 4 guys on a regular basis.
No.
So that's the negative. The only positive I might be able to make is that I think the interior is getting gradually better, and it's the tackles that need improving on. So whereas maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago I was looking at this line thinking, you're just going from left to right, and in order they're making a bad play, so the whole thing's a shit show. At least now you might have a bit of a semblance of an interior, certainly from a pass rush perspective, a bit of an interior offensive line to work with. And maybe you target tackles as opposed to thinking, well, I need 5 new guys.
Yeah, I think there is that. But there also is, I don't know who on Twitter was running down, Davis Sue yesterday on Twitter was running down how they've changed their tact on the players. If Fedi was drafted last April, and straight away Pete Carroll says he's the right tackle, so for some reason from the end of April, start of May till, what, July, when he was put in at right guard in training camp, something changed, and it completely kiboshed the entire offensive line plan. Because if you plan to put him at right tackle, the plan probably then was to put Gilliam at left. That then changes, so you put Gilliam at right. You then have to move Glowinski, who was seen when he was drafted and when he replaced him in that one game last season as Sweezy's heir apparent, if it was such a thing for someone like Sweezy. But he's now playing left, where he's a position he hasn't played. I think he was right guard when he's at West Virginia. I think left guard was the guy who's in Tennessee, Dylan Spann. But everything altered by just that one thing. Obviously, Justin Britt was all, it appears, always was going to be centre. I'm pretty confident they've missed out on the centre they wanted to draft the last two drafts, especially with how they reacted to, I think it's Morse, I think he went to Kansas City. That seemed to be the guy they really wanted. Another Missouri guy. I'd have been firmer to Missouri guys on our line. But centre is definitely sorted. They need to decide quickly where Afedi's playing. It sounds like, going from what Pete Carroll said on Monday, that he is going to stay at right guard. So then you just got to trust Glowinski to play at left guard. And as Adam said, just sort the tackles out. You can easily sort one out in free agency and sort the other out in the draft. And then you get another Odi Hambo. You get a couple more depth players in later rounds of the draft, because Odi Hambo, it was the first snap he's ever played on the right side of the line, apparently. I saw somewhere ever.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I saw on Twitter that if you look
at the lurch left,
two big bad plays that Odi Hambo made. I mean, one is the step on Wilson, which, you know, question whose fault that is, but it's not ideal. And the other one is when Clay Matthews Jr. smashed through the line and killed Russell Wilson without stupid hair. Both of them, Odi Hambo took huge steps to the left, and that sort of, there was a guy on Twitter who mentioned that it looked like the step that a left tackle makes. And, you know, guess what? That's where the guy has always played, on the left-hand side. So I actually thought he looked pretty good in that first drive, Odi Hambo. So I'm not gonna hate on him too much. I think there might be a play. I think there's more of a player there than there was in, like, than there is in someone like Bradley Sowell, or maybe even Gary Gilliam.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Russ?
Yeah, I can't really disagree with anyone. Like you say, if that's his first snap as a right guard, then yeah, you get what you put out there, basically. You can't just throw a guy in and hope that the best thing happens. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, but also, as we said with Russ getting stepped on, a big part of this O-line's issues can also be bought back and ended with Jermaine Afedi getting injured. I mean, that put a whole O-line back. What was it, 6 weeks we missed of the season? And again, it changed everything, probably. We don't know how much it changed the game plan and how play calls they could call.
For Afedi, he's also not good.
Afedi?
I mean, he has. That's harsh. I mean, he's not a bad player. But if you look at how many teams use their first pick on an offensive lineman, you would hope, in my opinion, for someone that's a little bit further down the line than he is. I mean, any stunt, and he's done.
Yeah.
Any stunt.
Yeah,
but we'll get...
And he's not showing any improvement there at all.
No, that is true. It is something which needs to be worked, but it is the second year bounce is a real thing, I think, as well. So it's a case of just wait and see, but all in the meantime, you need a little bit of help from the financial side of it. As Russell Wilson missed throws. I think Softy Adam was pointing out the one where he missed to Doug Baldwin and Jimmy Graham was open. But missed throws is not something that Daryl Bevell can control, but it's still something he gets the flak for, as ever, Russ.
Well, yeah, this has been one of the big factors in Russ's season, that he's been the most inaccurate that he's been throughout his career, I think, this year. He's missed a lot of throws this year that we've not seen before.
Yeah, he has. I think the injury probably plays a role in that as well.
But he's high, wide, a lot of throws. I don't know. It's just he's been slightly off all season, and you can probably can put that down to the injury. But I don't know. It's just been a bit of an odd season, considering he's got his record numbers as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that know more than I do about the game that were looking at a lot of his throws and saying, with that injury to his knee, he's having to do a lot of compensating, and that's messed up his mechanics. And you can imagine if you do, I don't know, if you do anything in life for 15 years and you have to change it slightly, you could fall into some bad habits. So that doesn't surprise me. But, you know, there are so many Russell Wilson apologists, and Stu and I have got a couple of favourites of those that will just defend him to the hilt and say, oh, you know, he needs an offensive coordinator that can scheme guys open. We get plenty of guys open, and Wilson's just a bit of an off year. It happens, and hope is going to rectify next year. But we could have had three or four more touchdowns easily on Saturday with more accurate throws.
Yeah, almost certainly. But for some reason, as I said, to start that Russell Wilson tangent, Darrell Bevell's got a lot of the call. And obviously, there's a phenomenal response to Softy's question on Monday from Pete Carroll, where he said those people who criticise Darrell Bevell don't know what they're talking about. And as I said on Facebook, I want to frame that quote and put it up on my wall. It's the best response to that, because that question would have continued all off season, all the time, but there's been nothing, no mentions of Bevell's job security since. If he hadn't come out and responded like he did to Softy's question like that, then it would have been continuing. Because there's a lot of talk about Cable. Obviously, he's not getting his 49ers job, so he's sticking and staying in town.
Yeah.
There's still been questions about if he's staying. There's been nothing about Bevell since that comment, so it's absolutely perfect. And I'm just going to bookmark it, favourite it, and frame it over the summer, I think, because it's just brilliant. Jeremy Lane is someone else who, yet again, got torched, for lack of a better word. Mohamed Sanu and Tyler Gabriel, who was hilariously cut by the Browns 12 months ago, so solid one, Cleveland, was absolutely not it. He's had a bad, bad year. He started off the first few weeks relatively, carried on as he finished, relatively strong, but he's just got considerably worse as the season's gone, hasn't he, Adam?
Yeah, and it's not often that Carroll will call someone out, but he did mention that he missed quite a few tackles this year, which is quite interesting, because it's just very un-Pete Carroll-like to call someone out like that. And you say Sanu, I mean, I'm looking at his contract now, and obviously it is bigger than Jermaine Curse's, but not by a huge amount. And you just wonder, if you had someone like Sanu playing instead of Jermaine Curse, how different the offense might be, because you've got to take your hat off to Sanu. He had a brilliant game.
Yeah, but at the same, he has had a very Jermaine Curse adjacent season, but yeah, he really did. They really did make the most of that matchup on Sunday. At Ross, Jeremy Lane.
Yeah, I've slagged him off quite a bit this season, and like I said, Pete didn't really defend him in his press conference this week, and that, I don't know, maybe I think they're definitely regretting what they paid him last year, and I think they'd maybe like to redo that one if they could.
To be fair, I think he might be in danger of the chop, I think, this year. I'm not too sure what his cap hit is if that happens, but the defensive back depth in this draft is pretty damn good. And as we spoke about a few weeks ago, we obviously saw a few Huskies coming up. Jeremy Lane's easily replaceable, I think. So even though he's on the money, he's the one second contract guy you can cut and probably won't miss him that much. Because you've got DeAndre Elliott, who was picked on slightly, but he did show he's long and he's tall and he's physical as well, it looks as well. So he could be someone who easily could take that spot.
He's great on special teams as well, he's got more value.
Depending on how quickly Shed gets back. So as we said off air as well, it's all about club control with this team and getting it cheap. DeAndre Elliott is considerably cheaper than Jeremy Lane, and I'm not sure the drop-off would be that great. Obviously, it just depends on how he evolves over the season. Do you think Lane's in danger, Adam?
I don't know enough about his contract structure to say for sure. I also think that if they have the chance to, they'd like to keep him around. But what's the date where you have to cut players before
June 1st?
Okay, so you can see how the draft pans out and then see what happens, because, you know, if someone fell into their lap in the draft they weren't expecting to, they could see that as an upgrade, and maybe do it like that. But I wouldn't expect them to be cut pre-draft.
Yeah, but elsewhere, obviously, DeSean Shedd, what has caused a significant knee injury, which is a lot more than just an ACL tear, is what Pete basically said on Monday. The depth back there is thin right now. Sherman's injured, although he doesn't need surgery, so he'll be good by the time they reconvene for the minicamp. Earl Thomas is still on crutches and making a recovery, because obviously, as Pete pointed out, it's not a ligament, so it's just a case of the bone healing, so they should be both good. And obviously Cam Chancellor's probably going to have a contract issue as we move on into the off-season. And then you got all the stuff going on with Lane, Elliot, Nico Thorpe. You've got Mo Cissé.
Kelsey
McRae. Jean-Baptiste. You got Pierre Desir. You got Kelsey McRae. All the while Ty Smith goes to Washington. never mind. But yeah, it's quite thin back there, so we'll key on a few of them and Josh and see what's going in a couple of weeks, and possibly have a look what's going on in free agency, where positions are. But positives from Saturday, for me, there is probably only really one, and it's quite boring from this point. Doug Baldwin, yet again, caught pretty much everything which was thrown his way, Ross.
Yeah, he's just immense, isn't he? I mean, I had a bet on any time Baldwin touchdown score, so that last touchdown really helped me out as well. But the season he's had, he deserves a better ending than this, but 5 catches, 80 yards, 16-yard average, and a touchdown. I don't know how he still is as underrated as he is around the league, because whenever they're on national TV, he always puts on a performance, yet the commentators always say, oh, we're the most underrated wide receiver. He's brilliant.
Yeah, but I think that is on the precipice of changing. I think he will be talked about next year with him being probably the best player to wear 89 in the league. I can't think of another one. But yeah, Doug, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was quite fitting that he scored the final points of the season.
Yeah.
Non-kicker, obviously. That makes a change that he actually made the kick. because without being a spoiler for something coming up later in the pod, I think him and maybe Jimmy Graham were the only two offensive players this year that could say, they can look at themselves in the mirror in the offseason and say, I couldn't really have done anything more for my team this year. I can be proud of my performance without any question. So I thought Doug was brilliant, and it wouldn't surprise me to see him being some sort of captain next year.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. I think the thing with Jimmy as well is that this is something not many people mentioned. We were lucky to get what we got from Jimmy Graham this year. 900 yards, seven touchdowns, whatever it was. He shouldn't have played this year if medical professionals were to be believed. It's remarkable that he even took a snap and to put up nearly a 1,000-yard season and still be told that he didn't get the ball enough. It's kind of one step at a time kind of thing. We got more than enough from Jimmy Graham in a certain, when you line it up a certain way.
You know, Stu, you and I have looked through some tape this year, and we've both remarked that the amount of times Jimmy Graham gets open is just incredible. I mean, he could, if he was zoned in as a number one target without question, he could have at least 50% extra on every stat he had this year.
Yeah.
Because he's always open, and it's amazing.
Yeah, he is. But it's also a fact of next year. It's really played a long game, but to see if it opens up even more with Baldwin being such a key part of this offense, it could open it up even more.
And Lockett and
than
Richardson.
We possibly thought. Lockett will keep the dampeners on, because I'm not too sure what the recovery is going to be like, although Pete spoke quite positively about it. Richardson is going to be fun. I can't wait. And also, the one practice squad, I keep mentioning it, if no one's seen the press conference from Pete on Monday, go and watch it. It's 48 minutes of near, as me and Adam said, almost simultaneously. It's fascinating stuff, a fascinating watch. And the one practice squad guy, which Pete calls out, was Kenny Lawler. My boy Kenny Lawler was the one he said he could make the jump in year two. So wide receiver's not looking too bad, but we'll see what happens with number 15. Elsewhere, positives. Sherman, I guess, with Julio Jones and all the injury he complained with. I mean, what do you make of all the injury coming out, Adam?
Well, I think the league are going to make something of it, and it's going to be result in a hefty fine, I imagine. If not, I hope not, but some draft implications, because it was funny when Carroll's press conference again, I don't know if we mentioned that he had a press conference on Monday. it was quite interesting if you're interested in that sort of stuff. He said, oh, you know, I don't know if maybe I screwed up. And
yeah.
he was talking with such a fake level of sort of shock that he made a mistake because he knows that the league are going to come knocking on his door. Because for those that don't know, Sherman was playing with an MCL injury, which was described as fairly severe by Carroll, and although it didn't make him miss anything, you are required by the league to report that on your injury report, and the Seahawks didn't. So
it's something that the Colts fell foul with Andrew Luck last year. They didn't get any punishment last year, but it was something when that happened. Apparently, the league said next time that's the precedent set. That's not the precedent set. We're going to start to act on things like this. And obviously with misdemeanors of hitting in practices and stuff, the league definitely does have precedent of fining the Seahawks. So if it comes down, then this can't really say much. They knew the rules after Luck last year. But yeah, that is a pretty damn good team in Atlanta. I do hope personally that they go on and win the Super Bowl because Dan Quinn's a pretty damn good coach. That's a really fun offense to watch. Annoyingly efficient. A 99-yard drive they had on Saturday and they never saw a third down, which is poor.
First time in the Carroll era.
Yep, it's the first time also where a quarterback has thrown for over 300 yards and three touchdowns with zero interceptions against the Pete Carroll Seahawks, which is just an amazing stat. But moving on, a lot of talk obviously coming out on that, focused on the O-line and Pete Carroll's press conference. So we shall continue that. Here is this week's Drafting Seahawks.
The Seattle Seahawks select Earl Thomas.
Over the middle, and it's picked off, intercepted by Earl Thomas.
Bobby Wagner.
Here's a handoff and a fumble. Here's Wagner, back for the touchdown, Seattle.
Bruce Irvin.
He's out, Calhoun's the back, Thornton's in good pressure by the first round pick. Bruce Irvin sacking Rodgers.
This week's is Garrett Bowles, an offensive tackle from the Utah. He's 6'5", 300 pounds. He's someone who our podcast guest from a few weeks ago, Rob Staton, has been banging the drum for a few weeks. And also this week saw WalterFootballs.com's latest mock draft and Rob Brand on CBS, his latest mock draft, both pin him at 26 to the Seahawks. He moves remarkably well for someone of his size. Played left tackle for the Utes in 2016 and had an interesting journey to that point. A juvenile delinquent with more than a few misdemeanors, he found faith and religion and went on a few missions before joining the junior college and recommitting himself to the sport. The highest ever ranked recruit from JUCO to join Utah, Bowles solidified the Utah line on the left side and helped them have one of the more impressive running games in the country. In the NFL, his athleticism may see him stick to that side, but a move over to the right is possibly more likely and fruitful for him. A guy who mirrors well and consistently, he's someone, as I said, who's Bob Staton, has been blowing the horn for a while. And recent mocks, as I keep saying, have seen him pinned to the Seahawks at 26. I'll be all for that, as he just is quite impressive to watch, and he impresses me more than Jermaine Ifedi did 12 months ago. And does seem a lot more NFL ready and NFL set than other O-line picks at this early juncture in the past. Certainly a name to watch as the draft process moves and the season kicks in with Combine and all the other Shrine games going on this weekend. Fellas?
Well, he played defensive tackle in high school, so Tom Cable's senses are being tingled already.
I love...
Yeah, he's. You asked me for watching a video on him, and I'd forgotten that a few months ago I had a look when you first mentioned him to me. Just looks like a really solid player, a good base, and he looks. This is a stupid comment, but he just looks like a bruising offensive lineman and the sort of guy that you want protecting your quarterback. As Rob said a couple of weeks ago, it's amazing how the guys you talk about at 26 now on the offensive line end up shooting up, and you know. Become top 15, top 10 picks. I'm not sure this is going to happen, what with Ramczyk still being in the draft, who will go higher than him, but here's hoping that he is still around at that stage, because that will give us a much more stable right side.
Yeah, I agree. Also, I think it might be Rob Brang as well, had an interesting pro comp for bowls in Breno Giacomini. So that
holding number 68
certainly fits. I know he was really good. I don't know if Giacomini was, but yeah, he's a solid right tackle for the Jets. And if you get a career out of him like we did, Giacomini minus the penalties and unsportsman likes and everything, I'll be all for it. We will be doing plenty more between now and April. Obviously, so much more will come our way and your way, and we will look to get Rob back on once or twice to help us break it all down and give us some names that we probably won't even think about looking at. But now for some deeper dives on the season. So yeah, the season, 2016 season is done. Adam, thoughts on the season?
Thoughts on the season. I think I was pretty angry on Sunday because I ultimately think that it's a season of a lot of our players' prime form that we've basically thrown away. Just by not having a strong enough offensive line. We have had injuries which haven't helped, but you could say that some of those have been caused by the offensive line not being up to scratch. After the Atlanta game in 2012, you really thought, wow, this is the start of something. We're building something here. I don't feel the same way in 2016, largely because, we do have expectations now. And it's not that I think that it's finished, but I think that it's time that we just have a few adjustments made, and we need to restock and go again.
Yeah, Russ?
Yeah, just mirroring everything Adam just said, it's a wasted season of Russ and Doug's prime, and Jimmy Graham will be 31 next season. That's getting up there in age. This needs to be sorted for next year because that window is going to slightly start to shut soon.
Yeah, for me, I think the 2016 season was always going to finish how it finished on Saturday. It was always, it kind of felt that way for about two, I think we said on the podcast, for like a month. It was just felt like this is how it was going to end. It was very disappointing, but wasting the prime is possibly something, but tight ends, players play for a long time. They play longer now than they ever have before. Steve Smith, Antonio Gates, Tony Gonzalez, quarterbacks, Brady, Manning, and all the rest of it. So the window is slightly shut, but it's not nowhere near as end of and losing the veggies as some people are trying to make out.
Russell Wilson is...
Yeah. It's not a rebuild that the Seahawks need. It's a retooling, which is what they need. They need to not alter their entire philosophy, because that's not going to happen with Pete Carroll. He's had this philosophy for 20 years, and it's worked for him. So two national titles and three national titles and a Super Bowl. And we are still one of the more dominant forces in the NFC, especially in the league. And it's a catfish, hard thing to do with all the salary cap and how teams just... It's NFL's not for long. And look how quick read options pretty much vanish from the game. And it's completely killed a quarterback's career in Colin Kaepernick. People catch up. Ronda Rousey in UFC has had the same thing happen to her, where she was so much more further ahead and dominant than everyone else. But now everyone's caught up, and now she's on the fall. We're not Ronda Rousey. But if something is slight adjustments are made, we could well be Ronda Rousey and just starring in weird adaptations of films for the next few years.
One thing I will say is there was on Saturday night and Sunday, obviously on social media, everyone's talking about whatever, and there was sort of this like apparent rush for a lot of people to say, well, I didn't see a playoff game from 1980 whatever until whatever, and so I'm not going to be disappointed because we're in the divisional round. And that's cool, but if that's your standpoint, you may as well have just given up after we won the Super Bowl, because for you, that is surely the pinnacle.
Yeah, you've reached the zenith of your support.
Teams like the Patriots, if they lose in the divisional round, they don't say, oh, well, we used to be crap and now we're good, so we're going to take it. Part of being a top team is that you are allowed as a fan for your expectations to change. I mean, I'm a Spurs fan who, and obviously not a few stats above Coventry and Leeds or whatever, but having a season ticket holder for 25 years through tons of rubbish, and now Spurs are decent, and so my expectations change, and I'm not just going to be, oh, well, I'm happy because they got in the Champions League once. That's not how it works. Yeah. You know, as a fan, we're supposed to be the ones that have the emotional attachment, and we do get caught up in it, and yeah, you can be pragmatic and say, oh, well, we did it. You know, we used to be rubbish, and now we're good, so that's fine with me. But I'm not. I don't sign up to that. We're now good, and we're not going to be good forever. And I want the best that we can get in this period of time. So, you have a right as a fan, in my opinion, to be demanding and demand the best at all times.
Preach.
Yeah, but at the same time, you need to be realistic about if you're going to play the blame game. You need to be realistic about where the blame goes. And at the same time, there's people not being realistic about where the blame goes for this season. It's just, I really do think it's a case of the injuries and weaker than what they were draft classes really did catch up with the Seahawks this year. I mean, the three of the four starters in the defensive backfield are injured right now. We've had Cam Chancellor, with the three of the four starting cornerbacks secondary at the start of the season, barely played a game together, full game together. I mean, they started two, and then Cam Chancellor blows up Will Thomas, and it's just... Yeah, but I completely agree. I think the way people, all that, we need to be demanding. You look at the AFC, it's always a Manning, a Brady, or a Roethlisberger at that stage. That's the sort of thing. It needs to be in the AFC where it's always a Wilson or a Rodgers. It's at the minute, it's not. It's all different, but we need to get to a point, and we're not far from being that point, where every year it's the Seahawks against X in the NFC Championship game, which is what it is in the AFC with the Patriots. I mean, it's just, if you look at the stat, where like, was it the 13 and last 14 AFC quarterbacks in the Super Bowl have been a Roethlisberger, a Brady, or a Manning. The other one was Flacco.
Yeah.
But you look in the AFC, it's been just an assortment. So that is, although we've won the Super Bowl, we've reached the pinnacle, there is another way to plateau that pinnacle and get pushed for something more. And the thing you need to push for me, is having an NFC in 10 years where it's Wilson Patriots and Rodgers every year. But yeah, I've possibly altered my 180 on that point, but never mind. yeah, we'll quickly go through the starters and key contributors and grade them out a la PFF. This could be brutal for some people. When we next pod, it will be the live one for the Willoughby. But we'll start now with the offense and the main man, number three, Russell Wilson. Ross?
Yeah.
You can decide how we grade on, like, out of 10 or like a PFF grade out of 100. So I'll leave that up to you.
Let's just stick to 10.
Okay. Russell Wilson?
I'm going to go 7 because his stats are still good apart from the turnovers. But his general play has left a bit to be desired. And I think he could have, when he got healthy, he could have ran more. And I was disappointed there wasn't as many read option plays when the option has been there and he's not taken it. Maybe he's been a bit shaken up by injuries this season. But yeah, I think he's played okay overall.
Adam?
Yeah, I think he is on his way to being an elite quarterback who will be a great of the game. And as a result, he managed to turn a lot of mediocre into a lot of good this year. But I think you look at even the raw numbers don't suggest that it was a great season by his high standards. And I don't think you can go higher than a 7 for Wilson. I think that 7's a good call.
Yeah, I'm going to go low. I'm going to go 6. I think I just mentioned about how expectations need to change. He's the one where expectations need to change. If anyone else, if virtually any other quarterback had a season with the turnover numbers, with the amount of overthrows and misfires he had. Yes, asterisk with the offensive line he's with and the lack of run game he had, more on that in a bit. He would be the butt of people's jokes all summer. If it was Blake Bortles who put up the lines and some of the throws he had this year, there'd be a punchline. And for someone who set such high, yes, he broke all wins record, but when you got the defense we have, even though they slipped up quite spectacularly at times, it's easier to a certain extent to get QB wins with a Z. But it's, Tom Brady has probably played out of his mind this year, but that defense hasn't had to do as much, which is probably one reason it's not the top rated defense and all that. But Wilson's the other way, where he needed to do more than he did to keep his to keep on that rise, and I don't think he has. I think he's been a rather disappointing season for Mr. Wilson. Thomas Rawls and the running game, obviously, in general. Christian Michael ended up the season as the Seahawks' leading rusher and has played for the Packers for the past 6 weeks. So that's no mean feat. Adam, Thomas Rawls?
I think it's probably easier to grade the whole running game as one, including the offensive line. Others will be here until Super Bowl 57. And I'm going to give them all a four. I think that Rawls had a couple of great games that he showed really good explosive talent. Michael did the same in some capacity. Lockett had a couple of great runs, but as a unit, it was poor. And I don't think that you could put them any higher than that in terms of a run game.
Yeah, I'd agree. Ross?
Yeah, agreed. I think four, maybe pushing a five when it all comes together, it looks good, but that's happened once this season, and it's nowhere near good enough for what offense we run.
Yeah. Right, next up, starting wide receivers. So for this, we're going to go Doug, Jermaine, and Tyler Lockett. Ross?
Well, Doug, I don't think could have done any more, so he gets a 10. Jermaine, however, you can get rid of that zero from that 10, and I stand by that. He has been atrocious for the majority of the season, and Lockett, I think it's hard to really score him because he's been injured, came back and looked good for a couple of games, and then got seriously injured. So I'll go with a 5 for Lockett just because of those couple of games where he was fully fit. But yeah, a 10, 1 and a 5.
Which also 10 and 1 and 5.
Oh yeah,
almost.
I'm gonna go 10-4-6.
Yeah, 10 definitely. I think Jermaine Curse has been hampered quite heavily with how close the referees have been calling OPIs against him. Some of them, I mean, the one in St. Louis, where he just puts his arm out and like tickles the face mask of the Rams defender and gets called for it. It's just ridiculous. Some of them I've just been where he's just been a stupid idiot. Where there's just so blatant. There's ways. Apparently, there's even more blatant ways of getting away with it, as Sanu showed on Saturday. Yeah. But there's ways of getting away with it. So I'll probably give him a 5. Tyler Lockett for those couple of weeks was Tyler Lockett of last year, just not in a return game, which is a different issue altogether.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd probably go 6 or 7 for Lockett. But yeah, Doug Baldwin can do anything more than he did. He is well on his way to possibly being 1A to Steve Largent's 1 in all-time Seahawks. Jimmy Graham, tight end. Adam?
I will go 8.5. So I'll round up. Yeah, 8.5. I can't even round it up or down.
Yeah, Russ?
Yeah, I'd say 8. He's 70 yards shy of 1,000 yards season. He's got 6 touchdowns, and like you said, he's been open a hell of a lot more than he's actually received the ball. So yeah, it's been a good season for Jimmy. It's just I think people expect the numbers that he got when he was in New Orleans, but that's not the offense that we run.
No, it's not, and it's also he's broke all tight end season records for the Seahawks. So, and he's done it when he shouldn't really have been playing.
Well, yeah, walking
doctors and all that. So, yeah, I think 8 or 9 is probably fair, because he, for where he was 12 months ago, this season seemed a long way away. Nearly get 1,000 yards, how badly and serious that injury is quite impressive. Now the fun part, the offensive line. Right, we'll go with the guys who played most positions. So we will go with George Fant. Adam?
George Fant, I will give a 5-2, because I do think he was gradually improving, and I do sort of get what Cable was saying, in that once he'd seen something happen, he was improving at it, and he did have some good moments, but he still looks like a basketball player pretending to be an NFL player at the moment.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I think there's also that Cable line can be used to a couple of guys in this line as well. He's learning from mistakes, so hopefully that doesn't happen in year 2. Russ?
Yeah, 5. He shouldn't have been playing this season. It's as simple as that. And he's done a good job stepping up and playing. But, yeah, he's a basketball player in his first season in the NFL.
Well, first season playing the sport.
Well, yeah.
The biggest plus for George Fant is the fact that he did see the field. He did play. And he wasn't although he had a rough day on Saturday, he wasn't a complete embarrassment.
No.
At all times. So I think that's also something to probably peg his progress and how he's going to look next year on as well. But left guard, Mark Gawinski, he was possibly the most up-and-down player. When he was dominant, he was phenomenal. That game against Detroit, I don't know if anyone's listened to the film, he was incredible against the Lions. But then he was quite bad and had the Ifedi curse of falling for every stunt that a defence threw at him. When they moved across his face, he was done for. So I'd probably give him a 6.5. I'll go seven. I'll go seven. Adam?
I can't give anyone on that line more than a 6 in the game. So he does get, well, apart from Britt, but he gets a 6 from me.
Yeah, okay. Russ?
Yeah, a 6 here as well. He's improved throughout the season, and it showed in the Lions game that when it comes together really well, but still not consistent enough.
Yeah, and he's a massive part of that when it comes together. Justin Britt, the Pro Bowl, I think. I think he's made the Pro Bowl. Centre for the Seattle Seahawks. They are a half dozen words or so that I didn't think I'd say at the start of the season, so I'll give him, just for that, I'd probably give him also a 7.5, because he's got to be better than Gawinski if he made the Pro Bowl. I'm probably being a bit generous here. Adam, Ross, Britt?
7. I think he's been solid. He's been a good... that was one of my biggest areas of weakness in the whole team coming into the season, because he'd been moved around so much. But yeah, he's proved himself as a solid NFL centre, I think.
Yep. Adam?
Yeah, I'll go with 7. I think... he was probably around about as good as anyone not called Nowak was for us last year. And I thought that centre play was decent last year. I'm not going to go out and say, you know, I wouldn't pay him this season, to be honest. I would wait for another year and see what happens, and maybe Joey Hunt develops, but he's not worth a contract for me yet. But I would give him a 7.
Yeah, I think we've found the best thing you can say about him is that he was playing and didn't look an embarrassment. I think the best thing you can say about Britt is that no one talks about the guy we traded to New Orleans much anymore, when we got a nearly 1,000-yard tight end in the bargain. So, but yeah, right guard, this might be fun. Jermaine Ifedi. Adam?
5.5.
Yeah, I'd probably go with that. I think when he was back, the same with Gawinski, really, but when he wasn't as dominant for as long as Gawinski looked. So yeah, 5.5 for me.
I think he actively cost us games, like in Tampa, which I don't think Gawinski ever caused a loss. I think Ifedi cost us defeats.
Yeah, but also at the same time, that was the one game where we didn't have Justin Britt as well, and Joey Hunt started, and it threw everything off, it appears, to of anyway. Ifedi, Russ?
4. He has been a huge disappointment for me this season. I expected much more from a first-round pick, and yeah, he's not lived up to that for me. Hopefully there's some improvement in the second year, like you say.
Yeah. You can, it's all you really can ask for from most of these players. Right tackle, whichever one you want to rate, Gilliam or Sal, is a bit of both. I think for the last month, Gilliam has been pretty good. I mean, if you dig up Vic Beasley's stat line, and you saw me eye-touting massively last week, he did very little. I think he had 2.5 tackles and... maybe one tackle for a loss and something. It's not... That's a pretty good job from Gary Gilliam against someone who was just annihilating right tackles for the last month of the regular season. But, yeah, I think Gilliam is clearly a more functional and better player for the Seahawks than Bradley Sal. You'd hope when Tom Cable basically threw him under the bus and said he wasn't physical and nasty enough that maybe lit a fire under him, and we see... that continue. He also needs a healthy off season, which obviously learn a new position and learn another new position, and then getting injured as he did apparently during the summer with a knee injury. It obviously weighed heavy on him at the start of the season and kind of put him behind the eight ball somewhat. So if he has a healthy off season, he's clearly the better right tackle with higher upside, but you'd expect that he won't be the clear starter by the time camp comes around in the summer. Adam?
Yeah, I thought he was fairly serviceable. Although, as I said to you, it would have been interesting this year if maybe that combination on the right was Jari Evans and Ifedi as guard and tackle, as opposed to Ifedi and Gilliam. And I happen to think that the first choice would have been better than what we ended up with.
Yeah. Ross?
Yeah, I'm hugely disappointed in Gilliam. I was really excited for him to be playing left tackle this season, and I thought he was going to make a massive step up, but ending up on the right and looking fairly average for most of the season. A decent game against Beasley, but a 4 overall for him as well. That right side's been a huge disappointment this year.
Yeah, it is. As we said, tackles is the biggest thing. Elsewhere, offence, it's all like the backups, I guess. So Poirson, Wilson, Prosize, Collins, McAvoy. Quickly run through those, Ross.
Standouts, obviously, Richardson and McAvoy. I think they've both got good roles in this team going forward. I'd like to keep Luke Wilson, but as Adam said before, that he's going to get some money somewhere else that we can't really compete with, even though he wants to stay, it seems. But yeah, those three have been good, I think.
Yeah, Adam?
Price is obviously worth a shout because he had two very important games for us. But the problem with him is, can he stay healthy? And even Carroll in his press conference said he's not sure if he can. So I don't know how you use him down the line, but hopefully they find a way to bulk him up and toughen him up, because at the moment he looks like a guy who is going to have a career blighted by injury as opposed to the career that his ability might be able to produce.
Yeah, I'd definitely agree with that. I think he was the standout of those five. Richardson's had a really solid month since Lockett went down. I mean, I don't know how many yards in receiving he had over last month, but it was really impressive. He's really set down a mark against someone who needs a healthy off-season, which he hasn't had. He's always had muscle niggles and strains and stuff, but if he gets healthy, he is going to push number 15, Jermaine Kearse, for snaps, you'd suggest, into camp and stuff. And when Lockett comes back, it could be quite a crowded room in the wide receiver room at VMAC. Coaches on the offensive side, obviously we talk a hell of a lot about Bevel and Cable. How would you rate their season, Adam? If you could.
I'll give Bevel 7 and Cable a 5.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Ross?
7 for Bevel. I think he's done as good a job as he's done in any other season. 4 for Tom Cable. I know what he's got to work with is disappointing, but that Lions game is the one thing that stands out in the rest of the season, that it came together for one game. If he's that highly rated and highly touted and highly thought of, then it should have come together a bit sooner for me.
Yeah, I think I've made my feelings on Tom Cable quite clear. It needs to change. I think it needs to change starting with him. Either he has even less of a say in the draft process and who we draft, or he just starts with these projects and stuff and just gets some veteran presence in that room and just pushes for it. But obviously we don't know the inner workings of the offense on the coaching staff and how they choose and coach players. Obviously we have no idea, but from the outside it's very strange, so I'll probably give him a 3. Bevel, I think he's been fine. I think the one thing obviously is also the Jimmy Graham making him a more of a bigger focus, but as we keep saying, he probably wasn't expecting to have him at certain parts. But his in-game adjustments as well need to change, because there is a weird way where he seems to play to the defense's strengths instead of our offense's strengths, which is just a bit weird. But Darrell Bevel's put this offense in the top 5, top 10 in all the charting before this year. It's just the quarterback injuries and lack of running game really did hold back. Can't be all light and happy, as we always are on this podcast. So what's the biggest Seahawks offensive disappointment for 2016, Russ?
The offensive line by a mile. We knew it going in, and it's proven so that, yeah, it ended our season because they can't stop pass rush.
Adam?
Let's go slightly different and say injuries to CJ Procise is the biggest disappointment, because that could have made a big difference to the rest of the season, how it panned out.
Yeah, for me, it's Thomas Rawls, I think, because he hasn't been able to stay healthy. I mean, obviously, they quite clearly not rusting back, but he wasn't ready to come back against the Rams and that kibosh 6 weeks. But since then, he hasn't. I mean, I don't think I saw him on the in the fourth quarter on Sunday. It was all Collins and McKissick, it looked like.
Yeah, 11
which is
rushes.
Just weird. I mean, you can't. He has to be better than he was. Obviously, you can say that to a lot of people. It wasn't helped with how few holes he had. But yes, he showed flashes. But Christian Markle showed flashes for the first 6 weeks of the season. Now he's now playing in the championship game on Sunday in a different team. So all the running backs show flashes, but Rawls, compared to how he looked before he got injured last year, and the fact he got injured last year is just a bit of a worry. It's a bit disappointing that he didn't go on to have the 900,000-yard season, because if we did, we're probably previewing the game, because we probably would have played at home on Saturday if we had a running game to speak of. Defensively, defensive backs, obviously Sherm, Shedd, Earl and Cam barely played on the same field a lot, but for me, Sherm was pretty much spot on. I mean, he wasn't targeted for 2 weeks. All the talk about him, and also going back to Wilson quickly, all the talk of him losing an edge is just absolutely ludicrous, because he wore a different cap, by the way. But yeah, Sherm was fantastic this year. I'd probably give him an 8. Shedd, for me, was pretty damn good. He's really highlighted how poor Jeremy Lane played as well. I mean, yeah. He's as all the coaches said, it's a hard job playing opposite someone who isn't targeted to get all the balls your way. And he's dealt with them for the most part. A couple of weeks, he had a drop off, but I'll probably give him a 7. Earl. Once the handbrake come off in like week 3, he was unbelievable. So I'll probably give him a 7. Cam, when he the second half of the season was a lot better, obviously, because he seemed to be niggled by something. So I'll probably give him a 6 or 7. Jeremy Lane was, as we spoke about earlier, I'll probably give him a 5. Adam?
Yeah, I mean, when the big four play together, which, you know, we're always going to end up going back to that New England game as the game where it all clicked and it was all perfect, because it basically was. And at that point, together, they're all at least 8 out of 10, which is, I guess, what gives you a lot of hope going into next season. You know, get all four of them healthy, possible exception of Shedd. But if there's one guy you could probably miss, it might be your second cornerback. I don't think any of them ever dropped below a 7 out of the four, and I think maybe Sherman could have pushed a 9 at his peak of the year, but I think probably within that range. It's difficult to evaluate because, as you say, that they do need each other to play together to be at their best.
Yeah, because all communication and everything, how well they line up and stuff, all comes down to them four playing together. Russ?
Yeah, I think Sherman's been the pick of the bunch really this year. He's obviously, we know how good he is, and he just doesn't get targeted. You look at Shedd's numbers compared to Sherman's in terms of tackles and stuff, Shedd's just jump off the page because he gets targeted so much more. But Shedd's been good, Cam's been Cam when he's been able to hit people, and yeah, Earl was just Earl Thomas, and he's the best safety in the league by a massive amount when he's fully fit and being Earl Thomas.
Yeah, right past which, move up front, Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill, Frank Clark and Cassius Marsh in particular. Obviously, the pass rush experts, for lack of a better word. Bennett, Adam?
I will go 9, 8, 7, 6 for Averill, Clark, Bennett and Marsh.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I don't think you can ask for a better season than you got out of Cliff Averill. Bennett, I think, like Cam, was waylaid a bit by his injury and his knee injury for a few weeks longer than probably we anticipated. Obviously, then he misses 4 or 5 weeks anyway. Frank Clark,
monster.
The amount of times that you heard the coaches openly criticise themselves for not putting him on the field more a year ago shows how impactful he was this year, and it's only going to improve by the more snaps he sees. Cassius Marsh, can't really shake that pointless, stupid penalty in Los Angeles. But yeah, he's someone who's kicked on last month or so when he's got more playing time, and has shown quite a knack for pass rush, but it's more of a specialist role than the starting role for Cassius Marsh. Russ?
Yeah, Clark and Averill have been incredible. 11 and a half sacks, 10 sacks each. They've been superb. Bennett, I've been disappointed with, but the injuries have taken a big chunk of his season away, and obviously I love Cassius Marsh, and I think he brings a lot of pressure when he's on the field. He doesn't get the sacks that he probably should do, but yeah, I think as a foursome, they're a good pass rushing foursome.
Yeah, and there's something which every year is something they're obviously going to add to as well in the off-season some way. The big boys in the middle, Jaron Reed, Tuba Rubin, and Tony McDaniel for the most part. Ross?
Rubin's great. I love him. He's not a flashy player, but he's solid. That play on Alex Mack where he just... No, that was Reed, wasn't it? He just completely stood Alex Mack up. The two of them there, if... Ruben's tied down for a couple of years, isn't he, as well? So they've got a nice little 1-2 with those two.
Yeah, Adam?
Yeah, I think you can see why Jaron Reed maybe didn't go as high as we thought he might, because he doesn't necessarily put enough pressure on the quarterback, which is a crucial part of the game and is something that we will have to improve over the summer. But as a run stuffer, he was pretty brilliant. I mean, only David Johnson really had his way with us this year, and he's probably the best in the business at doing it anyway. So... Reed had a really great first year.
Yeah, David Johnson's possibly the best running back we've played this year. We're probably the two we played on Saturday being 2 and 3 as well.
Yeah,
can't really think of anyone else. But yeah, I think Jaron Reed is on the way to be a Pro Bowl level run defender and stuff, but he needs to get more pass rush. It might come with. As he builds strength and stuff, and now they know that they're dealing with kind of thing, it would be interesting. But as I said to Adam a couple of days ago, the player we missed at that part position was Jordan Hill. We missed someone who could get to the pass rush and was an effective, if not dominant, run defender like Reed and Rubin and McDaniel were at times. But we can't rely on picking a guy who's in visiting town in August and picking up and expecting much pass rush from the interior. So that's... something we'll get on to in a bit on the podcast. It's something which needs to be addressed this off-season. But, yeah, for me, Jaron Reed was brilliant. Rubin is decent, and McDaniel was decent, considering when we picked him up. Yeah. So I'll probably give, out of 10, what would you give them, guys?
I think 7s and 8s all round. I seem to rate Rubin slightly higher than you two. I think he just does a really good job, and it's... just goes unnoticed, but him and McDaniel and Reed, 7s and 8s.
Yeah, Adam.
Yeah, I agree. And with that interior pass rush, let's hope that Quinton Jefferson, when he comes back next year, can add something there.
Yeah, because again, he was someone who's name dropped pretty much unprompted as well. On the offensive side, so coaching, obviously, there only seems to be really one who gets any focus. Chris Richard, how would you rate and review his year, Adam?
He is a guy that when we were discussing potential coaching moves, he's not a guy that I would miss if he was picked up elsewhere. I think he's a fairly conservative defensive coach. I don't think our defense has been that great under him for the last 2 years, but maybe that's just because he's young and he's learning, and he'll be better next year. We have missed the linebackers, by the way, Stu, here.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I just realised that. but I think Chris Richard's done... I thought for one point this defensive performance was on the season with all the injuries where they was up there with 2013 because, yeah, as we keep saying, injuries on that defensive side were ridiculous. Earl, Cam, Bennett all missing a significant amount of time. Shed's now injured. Jaron Reed had a few niggles. McDaniel obviously didn't get it to town until August. I think he's had a good season. You'd expect if he had a full quota, as we keep saying, going back to the New England game, you'd expect that he would be a lot more aggressive than he was, particularly on Saturday. Ross?
Yeah, I think he's not, like I'm saying, he's not quite as aggressive as previous defensive coordinators, but I think he's done all right. It'd be interesting to have a full season of all of them, because even last year with Cam missing time and stuff like that, I want to see the whole defence fit and ready to go next year, see what Richard can do.
Yeah, there is also one thing with the defensive coach in this for this team is that I'm not sure anyone would be missed that much because this what Pete Carroll does is defensive coach. He's one of the best defensive coaches there are in the league. But yeah, now for the main event, that's why I forgot on linebackers. It was 2 out of 3 ain't bad, wasn't it, Ross?
Oh, two tens. These two are absolutely superb. KJ's rightfully got a Pro Bowl nod now as well. Bobby Wagner, all pro. He had the best season from a linebacker I've seen since Ray Lewis played football. He's only 4.5 sacks. That's the only disappointing thing. He should have had a lot more, but he doesn't get blitzed as much as he should do. But Bobby's just superb. And KJ's stuff in the run game or the screen game, he's there every time.
Yeah, Adam?
Yeah, they were a joy to watch. And there's not really a lot more you can say about them than that, to be honest.
No. This is the... I mean, KJ Wright's been around this level, but Bobby Wagner was just a different breed this year at times. He just seemed to always want to get every stat imaginable just to get one in the stat and then stop doing it. Biggest defensive disappointment, Ross?
Biggest defensive disappointment? Oh, I'm going to go for 91. I love Cassius Marsh, but he needed to get more sacks for me, personally. I wanted to see big sack numbers from him, and obviously that face mask call.
Yeah, Adam?
Jeremy Lane.
Yeah, I think Lane is one, and 1A is probably the general health of the unit is just, as keep me going back to, I think that really did. But after all that, despite that, we did still finish number 2 defense, scoring defense in the league again. So, but yeah, we will have more coming at the live pod in a few weeks, as I keep saying. Until then, though, time for some more true or false. Ross?
Okay, I don't know how to phrase this, which makes it sound terrible. True or false, one of the final four quarterbacks will never be in this position again. Championship game.
False. Yeah, false. These four teams, especially... So you got Brady's going to be there every year until he retires. Roethlisberger's going to be there, but he's probably got 5-6 years, if not more, left. Aaron Rodgers and Matt Ryan are going to be annoying for a couple of years. Aaron Rodgers for the last 3 months, no one's played quarterback better than him ever, probably. I mean, that final 4 minutes on Sunday against the Cowboys was just ludicrous. He is a little bit annoying, a little bit arrogant when he listen to him talk and stuff, and how he deals with the big owls. But you'd expect that. But yeah, these four will be there at some point again, hopefully against our boys.
I'm going to go true, because I think that Shanahan leaving Atlanta will be similar to Hugh Jackson leaving Cincinnati, and will leave that offense in a bit of a flux.
That's my thought. Matt Ryan's 31 as well, so he's obviously got a long time left, but yeah, I think that's my thinking as well, that the Falcons are the ones that they've been here before, but they take a few years in between, so we'll never know.
Yeah, well, I think that team's in a much better position than it was, 4 years ago when they made this spot. Yeah, same quarterback, same Julio Jones, but it's a better on the defensive side, better defensive coach in Dan Quinn, and they've got a better running game with Freeman and Coleman as well. Just need to get the tight end sorted, that'll be sound. Adam?
True or false, as predicted by yours truly before the season started, New England will beat Green Bay in the Super Bowl.
True.
False. The Falcons will be in the Super Bowl. Then they'll lose.
Either way, Tom Brady gets another.
The Patriots will probably win the Super Bowl. But if they play like they did for 2.5 quarters on Sunday, they'll be in serious doo-doo against the Steelers, and particularly against the Packers and Falcons, because that was Brady was bad for the first half on Sunday.
Do you think they just thought they could just breeze that game, so they didn't have to be the same intensity that they normally bring? Because the Texans are terrible.
No, but that defense is legit. Well, Javon Clowney is just a monster. Man, there was like 2 or 3 plays where he took out all 5 O linemen. It was incredible to watch. Not so incredible for my mate who I watched it with, who's a Patriots fan.
Getting worried.
Slowly edging forward to the edge of his seat as the first half went on. My true or false is on that man Clowney. He is going to be the highest paid defensive player on his next contract. True or false?
True, I think, because he's had a coming out season this season.
He's been phenomenal.
Yeah, Khalil Mack gets all the love from that draft class, but Clowney's been injured for 2 years, and if this is what he can do with the first full fit season, this is without JJ Watt there as well to take some pressure, he's going to dominate the league next year, disappointingly for me.
Yeah, and we face off
with first round picks. Is it they got 3 years and one, or is it 4 years?
No, it's 4 years and one. Yeah.
Okay, so he'll get paid next year.
Yeah.
Okay, well that'll be fine for them because they'll dump Osweiler after next year. I was wondering how they were going to afford it, but with Osweiler only having 2 years of heavy guarantees, they'll be fine. I think that's without a question going to be true. He's an absolute monster. And one of my favourite players in the league to watch. I think he's brilliant.
Yeah, and all the talk around him over his disappointing rookie year was just ridiculous. They were waiting for that to happen after how dominant he was in college as well. If you go and watch back and watch the condensed, just watch the first half. There is, honest to God, two plays where he starts against the right tackle, takes out the right tackle, the right guard, the centre, the left guard, left tackle, and then makes a tackle. It's unbelievable. There's a great picture of Hasselbeck posted as well where they interviewed him after the wildcard game, and he's standing next to Charles Woodson, Trent Dilfer, Hasselbeck, who are decent signed human beings, and he just towers over them. It's unbelievable. But yeah, as ever with that segment, you can get involved via all the usual platforms and means. Before we wrap up, as we won't be recorded again before the NFL gives out their league-wide awards, we're just going to quickly run through all of ours. So the 2016 NFL MVP is Adam
Matt Ryan.
Yep, I wholeheartedly agree. I think we got into it more last week, but he's ridiculous. He hasn't had a drop-off. As I think Adam, you may have said last week, where Brady had a few games where it's just all running game and they didn't really do much. Ryan's pretty much always through for 280, 300 yards, and a few touchdowns. He's been phenomenal this year. Mm-hmm. Russ?
Brady, for me. He doesn't... It sounds crazy to say he doesn't get the love that he deserves, basically. He's a phenomenal quarterback, and I think he's had another great season.
Yeah, Offensive Player of the Year 2016 in the NFL is Russ.
I can never do this without saying that it should be the MVP because it's always an offensive player, but it's Ezekiel Elliott. He's been a revelation in the NFL this year.
Yep. Adam?
David Johnson, and I don't think it should be close.
Get out of here.
I think I'm going to agree with Ross. I think Zeke should be because it happened on Sunday when they sort of went away from Elliott and the game got threatened to get out of hand. I think, Johnson's done it on a bad team, and he's basically done it on his own for the most part as well, but I think Zeke, it's been just ridiculous. Defensive Player of the Year, Adam?
Defensive Player of the Year, I think it would be nice for Khalil Mack to win it.
Yeah, I'd agree. I said last week, I think that Beasley should win it. If he gets the most sacks, if he causes the most damage to offensive game plans, I think he should be him. So, but I wouldn't be surprised if Matt wins it at the same time. Russ?
You guys are mad. Number 54. Banging this drum all season long.
But you know this isn't going to happen.
No, I know it's not, but he's my defensive player of the year.
He should definitely be in the top three or five. I don't know how they chart it, but it's not going to happen. Rookie of the Year, offense is pretty clear who mine and Ross's is. Zeke, Adam?
That one is Ezekiel Elliott.
I'd also want to throw Michael Thomas in there for some recognition because he's a number one receiver in his first year.
Yeah. It took him a little longer to get rolling than it did Zeke. Ezekiel started rolling in like July, and didn't really start. But yeah, that's probably... Rookie of the Year on defensive side, I think this one's quite easy as well, isn't it, Adam?
Joey Bosa.
There we go.
Joey Bosa.
Yeah, Coach of the Year then. NFL Coach of the Year, Russ?
It seems wrong to say this, but Bill Belichick. They won three games with ease with Garoppolo and whatever the other fella was called at quarterback.
Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
To do that with a backup and then a third-string quarterback, just with ease, and then obviously they've done this without Gronk as well most of this season.
Yeah, It's just boring to give it to Belichick.
I know, but look how many coach of the years he's won. I think he's won two. That's not right.
That's weird. but I'm sure he'll take four Super Bowls away.
Well, yeah, exactly. True.
Yeah, Adam?
I'm going to go Jason Garrett. I think he's taken a 4-12 team with rookies in the two most important offensive positions and absolutely blasted through the league. And yeah, one and done, and you can get all your memes out and mock them, but the Cowboys are going nowhere fast because of a lot of the work that Garrett's done this year. So I'd give it to him.
Yeah, for me, I think it's Andy Reid. That defense didn't have their best player in Justin Houston for a few weeks. Jerry Maclin kind of went missing for most of the season. They don't have a very good quarterback. I just will never be an Alex Smith fan. They lost their Pro Bowl, All-Pro, All-World running back. It sounds like they might have lost him for good in Jamal Charles, but he still found a way. After 15, 20 years coaching NFL and having a system, he still found a way to get someone, no matter how cloudy and awful the off-field stuff is, someone like Tyreek Hill into the offense and such a big part of the offense so quickly, and he wasn't afraid to take risks as he showed. And he just, yeah, I think the fact that they won that division from where they were a month out was just phenomenal. It was helped obviously with Derek Carr breaking his leg and all that, but I think Andy Reid is coach of the year for me.
Fair.
Comeback player of the year. Now, this is, for me, is quite easy. Obvious.
Jimmy G.
Yeah, number 88, Jimmy Graham. Adam?
Just to be offer a different view, maybe Eric Berry?
Yeah.
Yeah, good show. Although,
didn't he come back last year?
I'm not sure if he played or not. He may well have played, and if so, then it might be Jimmy Graham. But he's not. Graham's not been talked about to win it, is he?
No,
not at all. It's just weird for like near 1,000-yard season. This isn't something they're going to give out at the NFL award show next week. But the biggest disappointment in the team.
They should do
for 2016. Adam,
in any team,
any team that's disappointed the most.
Denver Broncos.
They don't have a quarterback. They as I said a few weeks ago, they tried to.
They
go
could
to...
have done. They could have done, and they went down this route. It's not. This wasn't foisted upon them. They went down this route. Paxton Lynch looked a complete disaster, and they drafted him in the end of the first round.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it is self-inflicted. And so I'm going with the Broncos.
Ross...
obviously, there have been some absolute clown shows. But we warned you they were going to be clown shows anyway.
Yeah. Russ.
Chargers. They had a genuine chance to win that division this year, and they blew it by not being able to finish out games. And now they've got what they deserve, and they're in LA. Suck it.
They've got 22 players in IR. I mean, I can't.
True,
I can't,
but Philip Rivers throwing like four that. Picks in the fourth quarter for like three games in a row.
Yeah.
For me, it's the other team who's in the Super Bowl last year, Carolina Panthers. Denver Broncos lost possibly the best quarterback ever to play the game, and then did weird stuff with their O-line and all that, all the rest of it, but the Carolina didn't lose anyone.
The Panthers
did not lose a single body. They didn't lose anybody. Cam Newton didn't really have any issues apart from him sulking all the time about getting hit. Calvin Benjamin was back and fully healthy. Greg Olsen didn't miss any time. Defensively, obviously, they missed Kuechly for the last month, 6 weeks of the season, but that defense, even without Josh Norman, should not have dropped off that much, because Josh Norman isn't that good.
Cam Newton's, to have that, the real have Cam that Newton's much of a drop off. still on that field watching that fumble.
Yeah, it's the most... I mean, if you're a Carolina fan, if the Carolina Panthers are the most likely team who missed the playoffs to make the playoffs next year, because that team isn't going to lose anyone. They've kept... Although they've lost to DC, he's gone to Buffalo. But if Kuechly can... If Kuechly decides to come back, that defense is a year older with the young corners. But James Bradbury looks a pretty damn good cornerback and stuff. So off the team has lost nothing. So the Falcons have got someone chase them down. But to have the season they had is just hilarious. Ridiculous.
Look, don't ridiculous. Complain, because we now don't have to play them next year for the first time in 17,000 years.
Yeah, that's very true. But then we have to go best play the Falcons on offense again. But yeah, that will about do it. If you agree or disagree, then you can use the podcast Facebook page and the UK Seahawkers Twitter page to discuss and just criticise if you want to. Our choices, we will be putting them up on both, so argue away. But where can people go to do all that, Ross?
You can follow us on Twitter, and please follow us on Twitter, because we lack in followers, apparently. It's at Seahawkers UK. You can find us on Facebook, UK Seahawks fans. You can get us on Patreon now, with our new Patreon, and the 10 backers that are currently backing us, you guys are awesome. You will all have very special Pedestrian Podcast stickers winging their way to you very soon. For backing us each month, that's patreon.com/thepedestrianpodcast, and you can find us on iTunes. If you get us from there, leave us a 5-star rating review, like these following 5 wonderful people from America have done, or 4, sorry. Kelly from the Bay City, thank you very much for your review. Eastlake JJL, Dazgoot, and the Senators, that's your iTunes names. Thank you for your 5-star reviews.
Quite original usernames as well. As ever, we massively appreciate every listen. The 2016 Seahawks season was disappointing, but it was also a big one for this podcast, as it was the early sprouts of something which we hope will continue to grow and have your ear as we head through the off-season and into the 2017 season. We will be back in a few weeks, hopefully for everyone, if technology allows, at the Willoughby, coming live. Tickets for that are available, and info is up on the Seahawkers website at www.ukseahawkers.com and the UK Seattle Seahawks fans Facebook group. So, Ross, Adam, I'll see you guys there.
Yeah, long day for me.
Yeah, we have around 30 currently paid up. I think 30 paid up and all set to be there. But from us three, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and
go Hawks!
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks, Super Bowl 48 champions.